mistake because
yep.
it got through. All right, moving on. We will make a start on our ordinary AGM.
Ordinary AGM.
No, ordinary councilman. Well done, Nick. You're on the ball.
Oh, yeah. I'm taking the credit off there because we're on the same page.
No, I'm coming in.
Nah,
no, they're not
going to come in backwards and forwards.
Coming in for PA1.
Yeah, representatives.
Yeah. I asked if they
wanted to. Okay, so we're away. Let's see. So, obviously, meeting conduct, some COVID, general standards of conduct and behaviour, access and inclusion of people with disability, security procedures are the same as the AGM, but I will read them. Decoration details information are located on the wall near the entry to the chambers. It used to start on the right. And then likelihood of an emergency evacuation, alarm or sound evacuation board to assist with evacuation. When directed, everyone will be required to reach the wall location via the reception area. Go directly to the evacuation point, which is in the car park at the side of the town hall. Okay, moving on. So we've got presents right there, apologies, nil, in attendance, listed. So with somebody like to move, somebody like to second the confirmation of the minutes. Oh, sorry.
Subject to.
Yes, sorry, we have a an amended motion put forward. Would somebody like to move and somebody like to second the amended motion which sits in front of you?
I'll move it.
Councillor White moves. Would somebody like to second that? Councillor Cameron, thank you. Councillor White has moved the motion. Do you wish to talk to the motion at all?
Just
so I get to use it.
Sorry. Yes, it's just that when the item was on the table, I did speak against it, but when it came to voting, I spoke for it, voted for it. So it's understandable that there was some confusion, but the actual accurate records are that I voted for the motion.
Thank you, Councillor.
I haven't got the number of it. Water Street planning application.
She's at 9.
At the
17
Gordon Street.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Cameron, second, do you wish to speak?
No, I'm just happy to.
Thank you. Any other discussion, councillors, around the table? Councillor Sheriff, could you use your mic?
Do you need to note that it didn't make any difference to the outcome?
True. Just have to adjourn for a second.
No.
No? We'll just keep going. Okay. No, we're right. We've moved. We're seconded. Councillor Cameron, Councillor White, I've asked for more discussion, I think, and I think I was going to... Oh, Andy was going to say something. Andy, you were going to say... No, well, can you say it again, please?
Do we need to document that it didn't make any difference to the outcome of that item?
You are correct, Councillor, that we do need to say that the changing of the vote or the minutes as they have been reflected now will not change the vote as it occurred. Thank you. And on that basis, the outcome, I should say, the outcome, the vote, the outcome. The outcome. I'll put the motion. All those in favour of the amended motion, please raise your hand and say, aye. That is Councillor Frederick. Yep, I'm just checking. That is unanimous. Chloe, thank you. Thank you. Yes, Councillor Cameron's knocked the thing off. Anyway, moving on. Right. We're now to the confirmation of the minutes. After the amended motion, would somebody like to move? Councillor Kelly. A seconder, please. Councillor Sheriff. Any discussion, Councillor Kelly? Councillor Cameron. No. Put the motion. All those in favour of the confirmation of the minutes. We've done it. We've voted on it. Could have, but I didn't. So I'm just going to confirm the minutes. We've already done the amended motion. Righto. That's all. Mover and seconder is Kelly and Sheriff. Put the motion. All those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. I'll be a little bit slower this time, making sure that I get the proper counts. So, righto, moving along. Council workshops that have been held. Announcements by the mayor. Are there any announcements by councillors? Nope. Okay, any direct declarations of interest received? No. Do that closed. Thank you. Any tabling and actions on petitions, General Manager? No. Okay, we're moving into public question time. So as you can see, public question time states there that public question time will continue for no more than 30 minutes for questions with notice and questions without notice. Moving over the page. Open up for public question. Are there any questions from the members of the public? Oh, thank you. Well done. I'll ask you to state your name and you have 3 minutes to address or ask the question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Neville Scott, just wondering when the meeting will be open to the public and don't have to go in and out just because there's too many people about.
That's a good question, Neville. General Manager?
What we do is we continue to review the circumstance around general COVID risk. We've been having several meetings ahead of tomorrow's reopening of the borders, and at this stage the prevailing wisdom is that we will maintain the level of attendance in the room in line with the prevailing social distancing standards. So until such time as the Tasmanian Government adjusts those standards, we'll maintain a compliance with those standards.
Thank you. Any other questions? No. Take that as no. Thank you. Moving on to public questions taken on notice, there were nil. Public questions with notice are in our agenda and been responded to. Public questions with notice, there are nil. Councillor question times. Councillor questions taken on notice. So questions have been put in from Councillor White and have been responded to by myself and the General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll just record a correction to the response around the Australia Day Awards. The citizenship ceremony this year will be held at Chudley, not Mole Creek.
Thank you, General Manager. Councillor questions with notice. They're from Councillor White again and have been... Yeah, no, you jumped ahead, but that's all right. And you just answered that one. Are there any councillor questions without notice? Councillor Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, my usual question, are there any updates regarding the proposed prison?
Yes, there is, Councillor Temple. I have... in front of me a letter from the Attorney General dated the 13th of December, received on the 14th, which is in response to the letter that I sent to her and the Premier a week, 10 days ago, regarding about community consultation. It is a letter that is talking about consultation with the Deloraine community and looking at Ashley and... Colin Shepherd, the Acting Director of Strategic Infrastructure. I'm having trouble today. I haven't had a drink neither. We'll be talking to those about, and also the wider Deloraine community, talking about a shopfront style information booth at Deloraine, a dedicated website, opportunities for the community to express their views, and one other dot point talking about having conversation with adjoining and close neighbours. And the Minister thanks for our correspondence and looks forward to an ongoing productive dialogue. That's that one. Councillor Temple, yep. Any others?
Well, a supplementary question, if I may. Is Council to play any role in that process, or is that apart from Council?
We're not, well, I'll let the General Manager speak to that, but at the moment we haven't played any part in where we are to date, Councillor. I guess there will be opportunities, but we haven't had a
discussion with Colin Shepherd as such, or haven't had any feedback since they started talking about Ashley as a site. But Jim, anything to add?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, not specifically. We'll await any requests from the state government for assistance in that consultation process, but until then we'll maintain a position of advocacy for consultation.
And a second question, if I may, Mr. Mayor, concerning COVID. Are there any changes that are forthcoming in our plan caused by what will be rolling out from tomorrow? And added to that, I've noticed in other municipalities or some other municipalities there's a QR check-in for public toilets, and I was wondering what our position is on that or other similar concepts. Thank you.
It's yours, Chair.
Yes, Councillor, as I indicated in terms of the question from the public gallery, we're in the process of reviewing our COVID safety plan, which incorporates the full remit of areas. I don't anticipate we'll require checking at public facilities like toilets. In terms of council operations and staff, we're working through a whole range of things, not the least of which is to reinvigorate hygiene standards and those traditional things, but requiring things like check-in of staff, potentially putting in arrangements to minimise our exposure in terms of business continuity, having some staff work from home to build in that redundancy and everything else. Those arrangements are in the process of being finalised, and I'll be issuing a communique to staff and copying councillors on today around that, and you can expect the COVID safety plan to address all of those issues. Yep.
Thanks, General Manager. Any other questions, Councillor? Questions without notice? Councillor White? With the microphone, please, Councillor. Oh, sorry.
Yes, my question concerns the Consultative Committee for the Short Walks Project. It was due to meet in early December, but on the resignation of Bruce Williams, we were advised that the meeting would be deferred until February next year. Have all the members of the Short Walk Steering Committee been advised of this?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll defer to Melissa, the Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor?
No.
No? It is? Right. Yes, they have, via email. There were some issues at the start with incorrect emails that were left from the handover for when Bruce left, but that was rectified, and then everybody was then emailed to let them know of the situation. And that we would be in touch in the new year once we have found someone else in the position.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other questions, Councillors? No? Thank you. Any deputations by members of the public? No? Thank you. Right, we'll move on to planning authority items. So for the purpose of considering the following planning authority items, council is acting as a planning authority under the provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. You can leave the door open if you want to. Thank you. So we've moved on to Planning Authority 1. We have people who wish to speak for the item in question. I'll call you to come forward to the microphone and you have 3 minutes to address council. Please don't be nervous when you address us. We're just we'll sit here and listen. Obviously, it can't enter into a debate. You may ask questions that we won't be able to answer, but please come forward. So we'll start that process. I've got Nate Welsh, sorry, to come forward first. Thanks, Nate. Yes, so with John Harmy. 3 minutes or less.
Firstly, thanks to Council for having me along today. I think it's probably important that you have an understanding of my business. So I'm a commercial business. My business runs commercial tours. It's also heavily involved in outdoor education. And I suppose my major concern with the proposal that's been put forth is, first of all, it's going to have a direct impact on my business and what I'm able to do there if the proposal goes forth. I might just go into that in a little bit more detail. So my commercial business runs rafting operations both on the Mersey River and also a bit of paddling and swiftwater rescue training in that space and on the Arm River. Whilst that might not, or the rifle range might not have direct impact on me being able to do that, it certainly has a capacity to influence the experience of both my tourists or my commercial side of things, and it also has the capacity to impact upon the outdoor education side of things and the values that we're trying to espouse with that type of outdoor training. So that's one side of my business from the commercial side of things. Perhaps the area that I'm most concerned about is on the where the site is proposed on the western side of Lake Rowellum there. I use that area specifically for wilderness first aid training and emergency training. So I'll use the side of Mags Mountain there. I'll use it for both wilderness first aid and off-track navigation. And this then leads me into the second part of my business, which is the training of outdoor adventure tourism guides and outdoor educators in Tasmania. This space will be removed from my capacity to use it in any way. And the reason it's used is because we have the Arm River Camp as a home base or a localised facility, and we're able to go back there and then head out and do that specific training. Now, you might think, well, that's probably not that many people, but I want to put it into some context. So the people that I train in the outdoor adventure tourism space and also the outdoor education space, those people are significant contributors to the tourism industry here in Tasmania. There's only a couple of educational providers that are providing space or an opportunity for people to be trained up to move into this area of tourism, and I'm one of them. And I'm directly going to be affected if there's, whether it's a rifle range or something else that's put on top of Mags Mountain there, I use that space. I physically use it. And that then leads me into an area of concern that I actually only learnt about this very recently. And if I'd been consulted about this, I could provide a more detailed outline of my usage, how it's used, when it's used, and it's just recently that I was made aware that this was happening. And then I found out that the whole process had been transpiring for quite a while. So I do have a concern that not only myself as a commercial operator and also an outdoor education provider, I've not been consulted, and many of my community have also not been consulted. And I think it would have been very helpful for all parties involved in the process if we were able to at least deliver to everyone involved how we actually use the area. I get this fear.
No, time's up, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you. I should say I will give a ding when you're about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, to be fair.
We extend the time?
No, because we've got heaps of speakers. I gave him an extra 30 seconds, Rodney, so he had 3 minutes 30. No offence, Nate, but... So I will... To be fair, I'll give you a two minutes and 30 second warning rule just to know where you are. Next on the list is Karen Phoebe.
We contend. I'm going to read this one. Thank you. We contend the proposal does not satisfy sections of the planning scheme as such under discretionary use, zone purpose, performance criteria 1 and 2, and acceptable solutions. Rural zone. Why is this site marked rural? Why aren't other zones considered? There is no evidence this is the only suitable location when there's an environmental management zone surrounding the area. The Tasmanian World Heritage is 4 kilometres from the site, and there's tracks and trails leading off Mags Mountain, which is highly used by national and interstate visitors. The attenuation zone encompasses the closer landmarks of significance, such as the education centre, river and lake, as well as private landowners' huts. Within this zone, there's also an overlay of 2 to 3 kilometres from the point of firing to wedge-tailed eagle nesting habitat and recording nesting sites. The proposal doesn't address the risk of fire and firefighting. There is no information to advise how waste will be managed at the site. There is no detailed information on the construction, earth-moving process and contractors engaged. There is no evidence of the environmental impact assessment undertaken and by which department. There is no evidence of an independent noise test carried out. There has been no consultation with landowners and no consideration of the surrounding users. There has been no real consideration of the impact of the road due to increased vehicle movement. So based on these points, we contend that the application is lacking in information and is complete, and we request the council to disapprove the range. So finally, councillors, you all have a social and ethical responsibility to do what is morally right for the people of this region, to preserve this beautiful area for the many state, national and interstate users. I urge you, please, to look beyond the planner's report and examine those responsibilities in line with council's future directions and strategic plan, which supports our argument, by seriously considering the multiple users over the one user in this instance. We can't pick up a mountain or a river. We can't move the World Heritage area, and we can't move our land so that we're not impacted. But you can move a rifle range. I ask each of you, please, to put yourself in our shoes. Would you want to hear a rifle fire and all that comes with it when you're sitting on the banks of the Arm River with your family? Would you want to hear rifle fire if you were on a canoe in the Mersey River? Would you be expecting vehicles and rifle fire when you access the walking tracks and the quad bike tracks that are spread all across Mags Mountain? I ask you please to think carefully and consider all of the representations opposing this rifle range before you make your decision today. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Phil John is next.
My name's Philip John and my family owns the southernmost property in the Arm Valley. We understand council have been told there's nowhere else for this rifle range to be placed. That's because there's obvious reasons it shouldn't be placed in certain areas. Why would council want to accept the risks associated with building a range on a mountaintop surrounded by extensively used reserves, national parks and private properties? The planner's reasoning for the education centre not being considered sensitive use was because it wasn't a school. But the scheme doesn't necessarily say it has to be a school or the other things listed. They're just examples of sensitive uses. Its use involves the presence of students and people, some that are recovering from severe trauma for extended periods, and as does the use of our huts, camping areas, walking tracks and on other water activities in the area. And we have been advised that shacks do in fact constitute sensitive use. Stating there isn't a presence of people in the area for extended periods is false, inaccurate and misleading, and a report gives no evidence to support that assertion. Many people, including our Arm community, frequently stay in the area often for extended periods. We just do it in tents, caravans and huts, not houses. Is this not sensitive use? Other planners say it is. The planner's report states any noise we hear will be soft. However, shots were clearly heard at the closest huts during a locally organised test firing. Our observer said it was like hearing firecrackers from half a kilometre away, even on a day of strong wind in the other direction. This is contrary to the outcomes of a council organised test fire, and we question was an independent witness located at the firing point. Multiple rifles firing multiple shots for many hours would be extremely disturbing and irritating. If noise was found to be an issue after a range was built, what would council do then, and how would councillors deal with the fallout and the potential ramifications of their decision? The stakes are too high to go on a gut feel and dubious noise tests. Victorian range guidelines say an independent noise assessment should be conducted before being approved, and for very good reason. Council are custodians of the internationally recognised Mersey Valley and its surrounding highlands. They are of extreme importance to many people. With that comes a great responsibility to maintain and enhance this unique area for current and future generations to utilise and enjoy. The planning scheme is only one part of this very difficult decision for councillors, and council have a duty of care and moral responsibility to protect this unique wilderness gateway for everyone. We ask you to reject this proposal. Please don't allow a rifle range in this much loved and used area, and don't risk bringing council's reputation as a responsible, community-focused organisation into question. This very divisive proposal is a perfect example where discretion can and should be applied, as the report offers lots of opinion and little data. Your decision may well have life-changing consequences for the many people who have been using this area for many decades. Thank you, Mayor and Councillors, for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Phil. Andrew Harvey. The doors are open so you can still hear debate. So, Andrew Harvey, please.
Good afternoon, Mayor Johnson. Councillors, thank you for allowing us to speak today. My name is Andrew Harvey. I run a small business in Devonport, but I live on a small rural farm near Lower Barrington. I am an ADF veteran with numerous years of active service and a member of the Kentish Rifle Club. Last year, over 2,000 new firearm owners were registered within Tasmania. To get a firearm licence, you have to conduct a strict background check following a mandatory training course, which includes a practical and safety examination. The demand for positions on this course has grown significantly, and the current wait list is out to 8 months. The fact that firearm ownership is growing in this state at a very, very fast pace. As firearm owners, we ask the question, where do we get to practice our chosen sport and recreation? There are only a few long-distance rifle ranges left in the state, and these look likely to be closing in the near future due to close proximity to spreading urban areas. Smithton and Campbelltown are the two northern state long-range rifle ranges that are due to close next year or in the near future. The Sheffield range that we had closed last year. The state government and local councils need to be aware of this problem. And the need to provide the facilities suitable for long-range target shooters, as the current ranges that we do have, barring the two mentioned, don't even go close to the ranges required for long-range shooting. Long-range target shooting is fast becoming one of the premier shooting classes in world target shooting. Each year there are state, national and international competitions held within Australia and overseas. The range we are seeking to approval from you today to develop will have the facilities to be able to hold each of these competitions, which would bring many competitors to the Meander Valley, and these events would bring significant tourism income for the accommodation and service providers in the area. At this current point in time, there are only two target shooting facilities in the Meander Valley, One is the SSAA facility in Sassafras, which only has a range of 200 yards, and Deloraine Small Bore Rifle Club, which is only out to 600 yards. And we are looking for a much, much further distance, obviously to 1,000 metres for our target shooting. So the lack of long-range rifle facilities is obvious. So your vote today can change all of this and go some ways to providing a safe and secure facility in a remote location, which benefits the broader community and not just a few rifle shooters. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Andrew. Edmund Stewart. Edmund, I understand you wish to read out Travis Lee's application as well, so Travis can't make it, is that correct? Yep, okay. Yep, I'll ask you to read Travis's out first, if that's okay, and then... Sorry? I'm just reading down through my list.
Good afternoon, folks. I'm here on behalf of Travis, who could not... he's the president of the Kentish Rifle Club. He could not be here today as he's got work commitments. So here we go. Good afternoon, councillors. My name is Travis Lee. I am the president of the Kentish Rifle Club. I have lived in Mole Creek nearly all my life. I've spent many years working and playing in the Mersey Valley. I have a great love of the area and a lot of family heritage in the Mersey Valley and Upper Mersey River areas, including Mags Mountain. My father worked on Mags in the mid to late 60s, early 70s logging. He actually logged the site where the range is proposed to be built in the late 1960s, and it continues to this day. So Mags Mountain is no stranger to noise from chainsaws, machinery, log trucks, working vehicles on the road, etc. And while all this is happening, the beauty of the place is still intact, and visitors still come and enjoy the vast amounts of activities on offer to them. This rifle range will not change that. For the last 18 months, the Kentish Rifle Club has worked tirelessly with Sustainable Timber Tasmania to find a site on government land owned by the government that ticks all the legal, environmental, cultural, heritage and flora and fauna boxes, and we have found this site on Mags. We have walked the length of the range multiple times to make sure it is positioned perfectly, so it requires minimal ground disturbance and so that it doesn't interfere with existing activities. And according to the Tasmanian police that had given us approval for the safe operation of this range, we have achieved our goal. We have proved that the noise from the range won't be heard at Arm River Shacks or the Arm Walking Track, or for that matter, the education camp. Target shooting is the oldest continual running sport in Tasmania, and according to the Tasmanian Rifle Association, in its 134-year history, there has never been a shooting-related accident. The same can't be said for bushwalkers, walkers, mountain bike riders, or even offshore fishermen that need to be rescued or transported to hospital by the rescue helicopter in an ambulance or taxpayers' expense. Despite being the fastest sport, shooting is still the black sheep of the family, and a lack of amenities to cater for the 36,500 licensed shooters in Tasmania shows that we are left out when it comes to government council and council support. And I suppose that would probably run into 3 minutes.
That's dead right. Thanks, Edmund, for reading that out.
Thank you for your indulgence Mr.
Yep.
Lee's behalf.
And I'll ask you to continue on. You wanted to represent?
Anywho, my name is Edmund Stewart. I'm a primary producer and I live and farm at Paluna. That's just south of Devonport. As stated in a recent communique, I discovered on Friday that our previous letters of support, 24 in all, cannot be officially considered at this meeting as they were not resubmitted. I would ask the councillors to see that these letters of support are indicative and reflect the broader community support. I would like to take the opportunity to give an explanation as to the results of the recent sound tests carried out at Mags Mountain. In particular, the closest hut that is arguably within the attenuation zone and at the location of Arm River School Camp. So in my first illustration, we have the top of Mags Mountain, which is basically a plateau, a very high one, and it's about 1.5 kilometres, a little bit wider than that. On one side to the... that'll be if that's... Anyway, on one side there's the lake, and that's down at least about 400 metres. And on the other side, with the Mags Mountain Road and then the hut down in the Arm River, that's at about 200 to 250 metres. Now, when sound operates like this, when it goes off or if there's emission, it goes up and out in a radial pattern, like if you can think of it being a globe. It doesn't go down into valleys. So if you've got a plateau, the sound's going to go out from that plateau and up and out. It will not go down. That is the reason why we had no recordings with the little instrument that we're using for decibel reading down at that hut. Now, also, there's another thing that will stop sound from travelling outside of this very specific area. It's not just about altitude, it's about vegetation. So on one side of the range, we've got about 1,000 metres of shrubbery and trees. They're about 6 to 8 metres high. On the other side, about 600 metres of shrubberies and trees, which runs parallel north-south. Now, effects on vegetation. Noise buffers composed of trees and shrubs can reduce noise by 5 to 10 decibels for every 30 metres of woodland, especially sharp tones. And this reduces noise to the human ear by 50%. That's a quote from forestresearch.gov.uk. So that means, in effect, at 500 metres, at best, you will not hear anything after 500 metres to the side of that firing line. Well, we've got 1,000 metres there of vegetation. That's why we did not hear anything down at the camp school. My argument is this area is being carefully selected and it will not affect anybody in the surrounding areas at all. Thank you.
Thanks, Edmund. Judith Chapman Stewart.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Councillors. I'm Judy Chapman Stewart. I live in Paluna and am the Treasurer of the Kentish Rifle Club. Previously, in a past life, I worked in nursing as a nurse manager and clinical nurse in Western Australia before coming and settling in rural Tasmania. I'm very protective of all animal and bird life and their environment and their and habitat. However, I also enjoy target shooting, which is a safe and very strictly controlled sport. I started that in Sheffield, which was extremely close to town, a kilometre, and 200 metres from the nearest home. That range was closed in 2020. Now we attend Campbelltown when it's available. That range is 2 kilometres from the town centre, 100 metres from a suburb, and the golf course shares a common boundary. To my knowledge, no one has complained about noise, even during competition. There are numerous opportunities to attend or play other sports, such as football, etc., and they usually have top-rate facilities across the state and country, with millions of dollars being pumped into the facilities and for the promotion. Unfortunately, there seems to be a bias against our chosen sport. The participants are highly regulated and it's a safe sport, but we're often looked upon with disdain and prejudice. We've had a massive search for a suitable site, and it's taken over a year, and with all the mandatory authority checks have been ticked. The Mags Mountain site was chosen as a suitable long-distance range site, as it's remote and a safe location. We are aware that there are the two holiday shacks which fall just within the attenuation zone, but they are within a well and truly safe distance. We've had police representatives already done the physical checks and inspections, and if the proposed range was dangerous or unsuitable to the public or sports persons using them, then the police firearms department would not have given an in-principle approval. A forestry practices officer has also inspected the site and submitted his plan to STT and the Forestry Practices Authority. He's also carried out an eagle nest risk assessment for STT. These were both essential requirements for the application to proceed. Now, after the planning professionals employed by the Meander Valley Council have given approval following the council's strict guidelines, our sport and rec now hangs in the votes for this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no more people listed to speak. So, okay, councillors, thank you for those that spoke. Appreciate that. Planning Authority 1. I'll put it up. Does somebody like to move? Somebody like to second that motion? Councillor Kelly is a mover. Seconder for the motion. Councillor Cameron as a seconder for the motion. Thank you. Councillor Kelly is a mover for the motion.
Yeah, I won't add too much just at this point. This one's possibly been one of the toughest ones that I've come across in my time on council. I was very pleased that we went and had an on-site visit. There's been a few, I guess, speculations about what it may be, what it may look like and so forth. So I just want to open it up for the other councillors to have a debate and we'll see where to from there.
Thanks, Councillor Kelly. Councillor Cameron, as a seconder.
Thank you. I think I'll agree with you, Councillor Kelly. This probably is one of the most difficult planning applications that I have had before me and assessing it. I find it, I think I've probably changed my mind 365 times in the last 5 minutes. But it is hard. I think I say it often, I'm probably quite an emotional person, and if I use my emotion to make judgment calls, then everybody would probably win a prize. But I need to focus on planning and, you know, we went up and had a look, and that was really, really valuable and really important. It's been years since I've been there, and we're so lucky to have that just on our doorstep. But I need to focus on planning and make those assessments based on the planning. This conversation about fire, waste, building permits, they're all things that come. We can't assess them as part of this. So there's so many unanswered questions. It might have actually been a really good idea, probably, if we could go back in hindsight, that there was, if the applicant maybe shared some of this information with the neighbours. Communication always helps. It might have helped some of these issues that we're having now. Look, I really want to hear from everybody else, but we talk a lot about noise. We did go and listen, but noise doesn't come under one of the things that I can assess. Sensitive use says it's a visitor accommodation. Those noise requirements don't come into factor. So it is hard. It is so hard. But, look, I'd like to hear from others first.
Thanks, Councillor Cameron. I'll open up for discussion and debate, councillors. Councillor White.
I don't think this application complies with the planning scheme. As far as
P2, clauses B, C and E, are concerned, and they are concerned with the nature, scale and intensity of the firing range and the likelihood and extent of off-site impacts generated by the firing range. I believe that the users will in fact confine and restrain the users on adjoining properties. We've been told about the existing uses, which are wholly nature-based, with people coming to the area for wilderness experience or the bushwalking and camping and so on, and also about the school groups and outdoor education groups using the area for training and bushcraft and so on. For hut owners, the emphasis is on the quiet enjoyment of the natural environment, watching and listening to birds and wildlife, etc., and sharing with each other a social connection that's been built up over many years. So how would these uses be confined and restrained by the rifle club days? These are limited to 31 a year, but they would nevertheless impact others in the area on those days by dint of the arrival and departure of club and competition members' cars, and the presence of firearms in an area which is highly valued for its sense of safety for school children and others as they go about their activities. We've heard from outdoor education providers giving us feedback as to the negative effect of the presence of a rifle range would have on their businesses and the perceived safety of their established venue. The noise generated by the activities has been described in various ways. So councillors who visited, and I was very sorry that I wasn't able to attend the visit with the rifle club, they experienced the sound in the trial provided by the club as a muffled thud, and they mentioned the masking effect of noise and masking effect of birds and vehicles and so on. But then hut owners talk about the pleasure of listening on a still morning to currawongs calling up and down the valley to each other. So like anyone who lives in a rural setting, I'm aware of how differently noise carries according to conditions. Sometimes I can hear the train from my place passing more than 2 km away, and sometimes nothing. So I believe it's very unfortunate that an independent study to define the impact of the club's activities in all conditions wasn't carried out, as there's still uncertainty about the impact from this source. Further, the sound that carries from a rifle shot could in itself be a minimal disturbance, but what is not clear in the application is how many of these rifle shot sounds would be heard on a club day. The application gives the number of shooters present on club, state and national days as being from about 10 up to about 50, but it doesn't tell us the number of rounds fired on these days. So several hundred muffled thuds would indeed constitute a disturbance on adjoining properties. Further impact would be the noise generated by vehicular traffic. The road to the proposed range doubles back above the valley occupied by several hut owners, so the increase in traffic movements would present a significant impact on the peaceful environment that is prized by current users. With regard to the scale and intensity of club activities, as I said before, the use has been limited to 31 days a year. But how these days will pan out, given that the range is not able to operate on days of high bushfire or extreme cold, is undefined. This creates the likelihood of a greater frequency of club days at the suitable times when other users would experience elevated levels of activity, which would indeed restrain their or constrain their quiet enjoyment of the area. The club's estimation is that over 400 shooters will benefit from the establishment of the range. This increase in number of users poses a risk to the established tradition of leaving huts open for people to seek shelter if caught in wet or snowy weather or just in need of a break. This generous practice has been established in a community who know and look out for each other. Hut owners currently leave not only their huts but supplies of food and other necessities for those in need. The trust and goodwill required for this practice to work can be hard to maintain where there's a sudden marked increase in users of an area. I believe the introduction of an activity involving several hundred additional users poses a significant risk to the culture and traditions built up in the area over generations.
5 minutes, Councillor.
Yep, the likely off-site impact, minute more. The likely off-site impacts include that posed by the increase in traffic on the narrow gravel road into the site. There's little room for vehicles to pass in opposite directions, with soft edges giving onto a steep drop in the valley below. Current users worry. That in a situation such as accident or bushfire, a greater number of road users would pose a significant threat to the safety of all. The fact that the road was compromised in 2016 due to landslip does nothing to alleviate the distress caused by the prospect of the situation in any case of any emergency. So in short, I think the application fails to demonstrate that the club will not confine or restrain the use of adjoining properties. I believe it is our duty as a council to protect the qualities of those properties which constitute an increasingly rare environment that deserves to be maintained. I wish the Rifle Club well in their search for a suitable site, and I take their point that they have looked long and hard, but I don't believe that this site is suitable for their use. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. And other councillors? Councillor Sinfield?
My biggest issue with this, I appreciate everyone having their say today and all the submissions we've received. I wonder if, My problem at the moment is I don't agree with the assessment that there is no sensitive use within the relevant, or that would trigger the relevant provisions of the scheme. I think the scheme says 2 kilometres from the property boundary. It's a very large property. It might be unfair, but it is how the scheme's worded. In my view, the Arm River camp, let alone the other huts, do constitute a sensitive use within the meaning of the scheme, and hence all those provisions that go into Code 9 of the at the back of the scheme are relevant in my view. And without a formal independent study of noise, I don't believe I can make a decision that supports this application at this time. Had that been forthcoming, then and it showed there was no significant increase, if you like, in terms, or no adverse impact on those sensitive uses, then I might view this differently. So unless I hear something that convinces me otherwise, I'll be voting no on this. I absolutely accept that this is an activity that would be regulated to an inch of its life. I have no problem there that in terms of safety, etc. It doesn't change my view. I'm a little bit concerned. We heard on the... I went to both days with the representatives and with the proponents. There was a statement that... on the first day, it was said that the course would run 100 metres off to the east of... or roughly east, in a north-south direction from North Maggs Road. If that were the firing range itself, by my reckoning, that would push this diagram, that the 4 kilometres, across North Maggs Road. Now, I'm not saying that will be the upshot, because, as I say, for me, the noise is the issue I can't get past at the moment. But if that pushes it across North Maggs Road, there's a fair chance that road would be closed. One of the things I've learnt in the last couple of weeks is that whilst it's not open to all vehicles, quad bikes and trail bikes actually go north along North Maggs Road, head around in a clockwise direction, and are able to access the west Rowellen Road. They actually, it is a through road or through route access-wise for them. The other thing is that if that coffin-shaped 4-kilometre-long thing does overlay Maggs Road to any extent, then currently all traffic accessing the Arm River, and I believe Arm River Walking Trail, and that's been for the last 10 years approximately, are forced to go up the mountain, take the high road, because there's a missing link of approximately 3 kilometres on that Mags Road, which otherwise would be make a complete circuit. You can't do a lap around it, so anyone accessing that area is forced to go, depending on where that alignment of that firing range actually would be, they'll either go through or past the end of it. If it stayed outside, it wouldn't be such an issue, but I'm not sure of that. But as I say, my biggest problem is that I can't get past at the moment, and the reason that I see it as a problem, I live at the base of the Western Tiers, for example, at Western Creek. I hear the train go past Lamana Junction through to Deloraine on cloudy days, and it's probably 10 k's away in a straight line. On a clear open day like today, wouldn't hear it if it went past 100 times. I occasionally hear the blast from the Mole Creek Lineworks, which would be far in excess of that distance, depending on weather conditions. Many, many days of the year, there is a relatively low ceiling height, 4,000 to 5,000 feet. So it would sit above Mags Mountain. Obviously, if the cloud's down on Mags Mountain, then I assume you wouldn't be using the range anyway because you couldn't see. But if it's above that, what does that do to the noise? And so my issue is, without knowing the answer to that noise question, and I do believe it's impacts on sensitive use in the area, potentially, therefore I can't support it.
Thanks, Councillor.
At this time.
Councillors, any other discussion, comments, questions? Questions of the planners? Councillor Friedrich, please use your microphone. Thank you.
I'd just like to pose a question. Whether this application can be withdrawn, should they desire to do so? Too late now?
Yeah, it's been moved and seconded.
Okay, that answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think it's to you, George. So we spoke briefly before about the sensitive use and how you've come to that and talked about the noise. Can you just explain a little bit to the gallery, I guess, what we spoke about before, about the sensitive use and the noise? So if it was a house, like, you know, my house that I'm living in, what requirements would need to happen if this proposal was before us versus how it's been assessed as visitor accommodation? Does that make sense? Good.
Through you, Mr. Met. Thank you for the question. So the assessment's been guided by the definition in the planning scheme, which is a sensitive use means a residential use or a use involving the presence of people for extended periods, except in the course of their employment, such as a caravan park, childcare centre, dwelling, hospital or school. So based on that, and whilst there are sub-uses within this definition that do align with the visitor accommodation use, which is caravan park, the position is that the huts that are there wouldn't be considered sensitive use on the basis that they are not occupied permanently and for extended periods of time. I did have a close look at the educational centre, but on the basis that it doesn't fit specifically within a school and that it's not certainly not a caravan park or similar to that kind of an activity, I didn't consider that was a sensitive use. It's the position's based on several applications in the past, applying different forms of the interpretation of sensitive use in different parts of schemes, not necessarily in Meander Valley, in Meander Valley's scheme, but also other schemes, and also review of different tribunal decisions as well. So that's the basis that's been made. So when we've applied, and just to reiterate as well, when I've applied the attenuation code, I looked at and the diagram is in there within the code assessment. It should be on page 48 of the agenda. I've gone to the extremity of the site and applied a 2 kilometre radius to determine the land that's outside of the site, and then obviously had a desktop analysis to determine whether or not there are any sensitive uses in there, so primarily residential. And then obviously the site visit informed that further. And on the basis that I didn't consider that there were sensitive uses in there, I've determined that the application of the attenuation code isn't applicable. If there was a sensitive use in there, if there was a residence or another clearly defined sensitive use, then the application of the code, or the code would apply, and we would have requested further information, which would have likely have resulted in a noise assessment.
Councillors, any other questions, comments, discussion? No? Yes, Councillor White.
Just on the matter of sensitive use, and I'm just picking up on Councillor Sinfield's comment, and also I think one of the representatives talked about a lot of people, you know, we're looking for people staying there over extended periods of time, and there has been tabled this afternoon the mention of the number of people, many people, having many days camping, which may be, again, you know, we need a better noise assessment, but we also need a better assessment of how often it's used and by how many people in order to determine whether it qualifies as a sensitive use. So it seems very indeterminate to me, these two rather vital aspects of the application.
Thanks, Councillor. For my comments on this, I'm the same as Councillor Cameron. While I am a firearm owner, and I do shoot, I'm torn on this one because it is a unique site. It is a site that's been identified, obviously, by the Kentish Rifle Club after looking around for quite a while. It is also a site or an area that is used by lots of people for lots of different reasons. I would have dearly loved to have seen a noise assessment done. It would have been so good to have that sitting in front of us. It would have been, I would have thought, a clear decision for us to have made. I commend the planners and the staff for bringing as much information as they possibly could in front of us. I thank those that spoke to the council, and I thank those that put representations in. It takes a bit, obviously, to get up and talk in front of councillors, and it takes a fair bit to put submissions in as well. But it is a tough one, and it's one I don't think I can support at the moment, and I very rarely go against planning approval or against planners. So anyway, moving on. Any other discussion, councillors? If not, I will go back to the seconder of the motion and then to the mover of the motion. Councillor Cameron.
Yeah, thank you. I guess just to reiterate what you said, Mayor, thank you to the staff that have put a lot of work into this. It's gone over a couple of months now, and I think they know how delicate it is. But really, thank you to the representatives on both sides. It is really hard to get up and you know, put your opinion out there. So I do appreciate the time and the discussions that we've had over the phone and through email. I guess to say to either side, whatever the outcome is, just know that we put a lot of effort into this, and there's never any clear winners. So we do appreciate you coming along today.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Kelly is the mover.
Yes, this one has been a tough one. I do thank all fellow councillors for the efforts that we've put in to try and see if we can get to the bottom of this and get it right. As Councillor Cameron stated earlier in the first opening, was to get the emotion out of it and look at it on its merits. I do believe the staff have done a very good job and assessing it and correctly, as they're the professionals. where I struggle, this whole area up there, it has been for years a multi-use area for a range of users. We've got our rafters, motorbike riders, fishermen, you know, a whole heap of others that have really enjoyed this area. I really struggle with excluding one activity out of a multi-use area based on an emotional decision. Now, the sound and everything else, I'm not going to put my hand on my heart and say they're not going to hear things on certain days, but then I do question the volume of the sound, as in whether it's something that's tolerated. I know through the summertime you probably won't hear anything for March flies up there. We had experienced helicopters, and I could hear even jet engines, kookaburras. Once you actually go up there and put the hat on to open up the ears, there's a whole range of noises up there. So, and we've got to be careful as a council, as a planning authority, what we're actually assessing it on. I did have some other points there. As I said, this one's a touch and go one for me, but taking the emotion out of it and looking at it as a planning authority, I'll have to support it.
Okay, and I will now put the motion. So all those in favour of the motion as it sits at the moment, please raise your hands and say aye. That is Kelly, Cameron, Sheriff, thank you. All those that are voting against the motion, please raise your hand and say aye. That is Johnston, White, Sinfield, Temple, King, and Councillor Friedrich is abstaining.
I will abstain, because I don't think, I think we need a lot more information, hence my question if this could be withdrawn.
Yep, thank you. So the motion is lost. Do we have a... Did you have a foreshadowed motion?
Well, do I need to foreshadow it, or I just put an alternate motion?
Just put a new motion forward, alternative motion.
Well, I put the motion that the application, as we see on the screen, you don't want me to read all that out, be refused for the following reasons. The proposed discretionary use fails to satisfy clause 20.3.1, performance criteria 2, paragraphs B, C, and E, in that the nature, scale, and intensity of the firing range and the likelihood and extent of off-site impacts generated by the firing range will confine and restrain use on adjoining properties.
That's a motion put up by Councillor White. Do I have a second of that motion? Councillor Sinfield. Any discussion, further discussion, Councillor White, on that motion?
No further discussion.
Councillor Sinfield as a seconder. With your microphone if you are, Councillor.
No.
Thanks, Councillor Sinfield. Any discussion, councillors? Councillor King.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank Deb for the time and effort that she's put into looking at alternatives for the original motion as it was put. I think we've found the right answer at this point in time with the information available to us. Also at this point in time. So, thank you.
Thanks, Councillor King. Councillors, any other discussion? No. Councillor Sinfield wrapping up. Any further discussion?
No, I think it's been said.
Thanks, Councillor Sinfield. Councillor White, as the mover.
No further discussion.
Okay, I'll put the motion. All those in favour of the motion as sits, please say aye and raise your hands. Thank you. So it's, again, we're all up, are we? Johnston, Cameron, White, Sinfield, Temple, King, Friedrich. Thank you. Those against? Councillor Sheriff and Councillor Kelly. Thank you. Motion has been moved. Passed. Thank you. Thank you to those. Yep, you can actually get up and leave if you wish. I'm sure you don't want to continue on. So. Okay, Planning Authority 2. We have potentially Ari Boss. No? Not here. Okay. Right. So moving on to Planning Authority 2. You're all right, you don't need a break. You're happy to keep going after that? Right, that's our 5 minutes in. Are you going to let him go? No, that's all right. Jackie's out there. They'll be all right. We're just going to have 5 minutes. Planning Authority 2. We have no representatives for that, so somebody would like to move, somebody would like to second that. Councillor Friedrich. Seconder, please. Councillor Cameron, thank you. Councillor Friedrich is the mover. With your microphone, please.
Sorry. I don't really have a problem with the application as such, providing that the problem that existed previously with the road, the access road, that the current owners, which is the Muirs, isn't it? Yeah, the Muirs, that they can be assured that it'll have no impact on their road access. Thank you.
Through you to the planners, can I just clarify what Councillor Friedrich was questioning about? There was a cast overlay put on the map that somebody was worried about access to a different road. Can that just be clarified for the minutes of the meeting, for the recording, I guess?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The access that is raised in the representation doesn't concern the two titles that we're considering for this subdivision.
Thank you. Councillor Cameron has the seconder.
I don't have a lot to add, but thank you to Heidi for the work she's put into this. And my only real question was what Councillor Friedrich raised before about the representation with the access, which has been clarified. But just for the purpose of those tuning in today, the lot sizes are quite large, but you mentioned earlier about the, you know, could they potentially be subdivided down to smaller, and you had some comments on that. I'm just wondering if you could share that with everybody else.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The lots as they are as in front of us for the subdivision means the opportunity for subdivision again is not existent, because the lot design only allows you to reduce the lot area of 10 hectares down to 8 under the performance criteria.
Thank you. Anything else, Councillor Cameron? Nope. Okay, open up. Councillors, Councillor Sinfield.
Yeah, question. The only sort of issue, and it's not really an issue, I don't think, lots 4 and 5, you know, they've gone under the acceptable solution and one sits on the bottom limit of the performance criterion side of the scheme. Is there something about those two blocks as to why you wouldn't just leave it at 17, for example? What's the merit that you know, yes, they want to divide it up into 5, but what's is there some characteristics about 4 and 5 that are natural natural division between the two to justify going down to that level? You know, cast, topic, you know, features of the land that would encourage one to see them as two lots as opposed to one.
So the application is assessed against the performance criteria, and that calls on the natural values, the topography, building location or intended location of buildings, any existing buildings, natural landscape values, whether there's adequate private open space. So the performance criteria provides the council the opportunity to consider those lot configurations. They essentially have been created in line with the karst features and with the topography of those locations, and that's discussed in my report on page 191 in terms of the matters that were considered for those lots. We're required to... The question that's being asked by the planning scheme is not whether there should be an alternative lot configuration considered, but the application that is in front of us and whether that complies with the standard of the scheme.
My other question is, as I've raised earlier, is more to do with process, in that we're dividing
Turn your microphone on, Councillor Simpson.
I'm usually brilliant at that. Failed twice in 2 minutes. So I had the feeling somewhere historically we've always done this as like a, yes, we do it all one time, but a two-step process where we've joined the two lots together and then divided them into five. And Joe Oliver might have been the person to have answered this question for us, and she's not here. I just wonder, do we have a problem in what we're doing in a legal sense, Crown Lands Act, all those sorts of things? And the other thing that I notice is that the lot, and I haven't got the number in front of me, the long, narrow original lot at the northern part of the site, there's a 10-metre road reserve that heads north up the eastern side of that lot, and it stops when it gets to the narrow lot. I'm just trying to find the page, sorry. And there is no road reserve north of that point, so we're actually creating a road reserve through to property... So property number that I can see on my screen is 498. The road reserve on one of the diagrams doesn't go up the side of that narrow lot. So I'll find that for you. So on page 175, it shows a road reserve that's 10.06 metres wide, going all the way from the, what it says is, I guess, Miles Road north to property number 490. Yep. But down further where the original title is, that road reserve on that map, I'll just find that for you, doesn't go all the way up there.
Councillor, can you expand on the question you're trying to ask?
So, well, the question is, have we properly dealt with, or are we creating a road reserve, or do we need to create a road reserve on the... on there? See, on the original, on page 198, the road reserve stops shy of property number 498. Do we need to deal with that in what we're dealing with today? Stops.
198 or 194?
193, sorry.
That's a good question, Councillor.
Yeah, well, I hadn't actually spotted that earlier. I only just spotted that now, but it was off the back of the other question. As I say, I had the feeling historically when we did these sorts of things, we did a consolidation of the title and then divided it up however we want to do it. So this is not opposing what's been proposed. It's simply trying to work through the legalities of. Guys, I did try to.
Do you want to ask a question about
council?
Yep. So. Microphone, Rodney.
I had done a moment. The original two titles appear to show the road reserve not going all the way through to property 4 number 498 to the north. What we're doing now shows the road reserve going all the way through. And have we, or are we, or do we need to deal with that in what we're doing today?
The plan is the same. Damn good question. Oh, the road reserve.
It's probably also interesting that it's only 10.06 metres wide in the first place, but that's probably a question for a different day.
So I guess moving this forward, Rodney, the question you asked is a relevant question, but will it affect the decision that's in front of us? Probably not. So if you're happy while they're talking about it, I might go to Tanya for the sake of moving forward. So Councillor King, you had a question?
The question that I have is with regard to the proposed new lot sizes. My understanding is that this particular area and the zoning is commensurate with lot sizes of not less than 10 hectares. Yet before us we have an application with lots 4 and 5 both being sub 10 hectares, with lot 4 being 9 and lot 5 being proposed to be 8 hectares. How does this meet the scheme?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That's in relation to the discussion we just had earlier about the performance criteria, and it's we've had the similar question asked. So that's in terms of lot design, of you have the acceptable solution and the performance criteria. The planning scheme calls on you to comply with the standard of the lot design, and you can do that in two ways, through the acceptable solution or the performance criteria. If you cannot comply with the acceptable solution falls away and you assess it against the performance criteria, which is what I've got in my report, which recommends approval having regard to the requirements of the performance criteria to demonstrate compliance with the standard.
Thanks, Heidi. Thanks, Councillor. Any other questions, Councillors? Comments? Do you need an answer to that, Rodney, before we actually...
Sort of, yes. I'm sort of happy with what's being proposed. I'm just, it's more a technical point of view. Can we do it in the manner we're doing?
It won't change your vote then, I guess that's what I'm querying. So if that's okay, we'll come back. Chris, we'll... Yeah, please do.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the procedural part of the actual subdivision, putting two lots together first and then putting it out to five, it's not a requirement that we have to put the two lots together prior to making the five. The application covers both those certificate of titles, so it is that those existing titles are involved and they're creating five lots from those two.
I suppose my problem there is that the Act itself, in the definition of development, includes consolidation of lots, right? And the subdivision excludes consolidation of lots from the definition. So one deals, and what I'm getting at is that little narrow lot, whatever it's called, CP, whatever, little elongated one, ends up in two different parcels of land. So it's both subdivision and accretion or consolidation of lots. So again, it's just...
Yep. Righto. Do you have an answer for Councillor Sinfield before I move on? Yes, I do.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. The road reserve already exists. It's just the information shown in the report, but it's already there on the title.
Okay.
To service that lot.
Yeah. Good. Don't ask any further questions. Right, moving on. Any other discussion, councillors? If not, I'll go back to the second of the motion, Councillor Cameron. Thank you, Councillor Friedrich. Say that again, you would have liked to see 4 instead of 5.
I forgot what I said. No, I would have preferred to see 4 instead of 5. I think that would meet the expectations, really. But if everybody else is happy, then I'll vote yes.
Okay. All right, being no further discussion, I'll put the motion, and all those in favour, please raise your hand and say aye. So there's Johnson, Kelly, Cameron, King, Sheriff, Friedrich. Oh, sorry, White. White, not King. Sorry, Clyde. Are those against? Please raise your hands. So that is Council Sinfield, Temple, and King. Okay. Righto. Thank you. Planning Authority 3. Do we have somebody? Planning Authority B. Okay. So moving on to Planning Authority 3, which is 9 Buckingham Place, Prospect Vale. We have Mr. Barker, who you wish to speak, Mr. Barker? Yes, good, thank you. So you've got 3 minutes. At 2 minutes and 30, I'll ding the bell. Finally getting round to that. You've had to wait 3 years for me to ding the bell, so it's finally got to learn these things. So, sorry, Doug, if you want to come up and give us your 3 minute spiel, that would be good.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Doug Barker, 10 Buckingham Place Prospect. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council members, for letting me have a chance to come down and have a talk regarding this matter. My wife and I have been in Buckingham Place for 25 to 30 years now, and it's been a really good cul-de-sac. But since this problem came up with number 9, it's been a bit of a headache for quite a number of our residents in the street. I don't know whether any of the councillors are aware the state and the condition of number 9, if anyone's been there or not, but actually it's been unoccupied for the last 3 to 4 months, and to our situation it's becoming a bit of a fire hazard with all the long grass, and even inside the home where we can see, it's just derelict. With a lot of functions going on with a lot of the residents during the year, a lot of the residents find that parking is a major problem. We find that the cul-de-sac really isn't designed for extra vehicles and extra dwellings to be put in to the area as well, especially for the recycling the garbage guys week after week. They find it very hard to hassle trying to manoeuvre with all the parked cars in the street as well. To my way of thinking, I just think with this proposal for the new unit, it's really not designed to where it's going to go, especially for the entrances for emergency vehicles and that sort of thing. For ambulances and fire brigades, it's really in a corner block. But at the end of the day, we just feel that my wife and I and other rest of the neighbours, we want to oppose this proposal. I just like to hope you take it on board and have a nice, reasonable good think about it. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you very much.
Making the effort to come and see us and talk to us. Okay, councillors, somebody like to move? Somebody like to second this motion? Councillor Cameron, a seconder for this motion. Councillor Sinville, thank you. As the mover, Councillor Cameron.
Look, this is actually quite difficult for me to get my head around. I do find it difficult. I think Councillor Friedrich just said before in a chat I was having to him, you know, one moment we're talking about 10 hectare blocks and whether or not they were big enough to have a house, and now we're looking at this one, and there's quite a large house there in a busy cul-de-sac, and the application is to build another three-bedroom home and having to demolish part of the existing property to make that happen. It's not something that sits well with me. I'm not sure whether or not other councils, where their thoughts are and where to go with this. I just don't, parking, to say that there would be two parking places and the rest of them can park on the street, well, that's really difficult in a cul-de-sac, full stop. So I'm keen to keep chatting on this with others.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Sinfield as the seconder.
Yes, I really did a deputy mayor on this one to open this up to discussion. That's why I've seconded it, to see what the issues are.
Thanks, Councillor. Okay, open up for discussion. Councillors, questions? Councillor Friedrich.
I have an issue with the whole concept. When you have to take half your garage off or whatever to build a house, then you obviously have a problem, space problem. I have a problem with what it creates. Parking worldwide is an issue. It's not only whatever, especially in the cul-de-sac. So it's not only about building the house or not, it's about the other impact on everybody around them. And I think this is not conducive to a good living in future and everything else, never mind the garbage and so on and so on. So I hope we can find a reason to not approve it.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Watt.
Yes, I have a question about the diagram about parking. I'm not really sure what I'm looking at. It's on page 292. And it talks about off-street parking, right. So this is on everybody's own properties. But there's three cars in a row for several of them, and I don't really know how that works. How can you possibly have three cars in a row and get one out without taking all out and all back?
You just take the back one out, Councillor.
I do not understand how that can be proposed I don't know if it's been proposed as a solution, but how can you say there are three parking spaces when, you know, one behind the other? What does it mean? Can someone enlighten me as to how it's supposed to work?
Is that a question for the planners? Councillor Kelly, if you're going to use that. Come on. I know.
My interpretation of it is if you follow Rodney up a lane and park behind him, and then I park behind you, that's the example we've got here.
Okay. No. Heidi.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So the diagram there is just to represent approximately the number of parking spaces that you can accommodate off the street. There is, you can have a tandem arrangement. It's not ideal, but you can, a tandem is something you can achieve. And currently, you've got on the street itself, you've got actually a large indentation bay as well for parking as well, just before the head of the actual cul-de-sac. But all that is meant to represent is that in comparison to other areas, these dwellings and houses have very long driveways, and it gives the opportunity to park off street. Yes, but it's to demonstrate that essentially there's opportunity for off-street parking and it can be achieved.
Okay, Councillor Cameron.
So this is a question for Heidi. If this application was for two bedroom, not three, what would the parking requirements be then?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So you have in the general residential zone, so the parking space requirements is in table C21, and it sets the parking requirement in the use for residential. And so in the general residential zone, if you have a one bedroom, you only require one space. But if you have a two-bedroom or more, then you require two spaces. And plus a visitor. But that's addressed in the next one down.
Any other questions, Councillor?
No.
Okay. Councillor Sidfield.
If I may start off by contributing to that, I've spoken to both representatives. There have been occasions when they've come home and not been able to get in their own driveway, and had the hand on horn and wait for somebody to come out and move the car, which is not a good situation. I mean, that can happen for emergency reasons or whatever, but if it's happening more regularly, it's not a good outcome. My questions to the consultant town planner, Heidi, is the first one is about private open space. I was concerned as to whether or not, given the applicant's own diagrams, as to whether it met the minimum requirement, all the various elements of the acceptable solution for private open space, or in fact would have to be assessed under the performance criterion.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. What we're calling on is the acceptable solution A2 of clause 843. And what that requires is that where for a dwelling you either have 24 square metres or 12 square metres. In this case, the 24 square metre applies. And then the second component of that clause is that it has to have a minimum horizontal dimension of not less than 4 metres. And the application achieves that for a horizontal dimension of 4 metres. And in remeasuring it again, it actually achieves that requirement of the acceptable solution.
Thank you. One more, Rodney?
Yeah, well,
just
how that meets that. Are you saying that only one of the dimensions needs to be 4 metres, or both? All right. So if I have a have an issue with that, in that my view is you can never have a square or a rectangle that doesn't achieve 24 square, that's required to meet a minimum of 24 square metres, that wouldn't have a side that was longer than 4 metres, and hence the ordinance would be totally superfluous if it was asking that. My view is, respectfully, is that it's saying that no horizontal dimension can be less than 4 metres. Can I get a comment on that, please?
Yep.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. My interpretation, as I've assessed it, stands. If a different interpretation is taken, you may take that approach.
Thanks, Heidi.
I don't think anything turns on it, but I raise it anyway in the interest of fullness. The shadow diagrams that were provided by the client for winter seem rather peculiar, and the reason that I hesitate to say that it makes any difference is that it's a fair area the existing house is ending up with, from my computer's just turned itself off, is 267 square metres, or some fairly large area, but the shadow diagram has a significant shadow for 9 o'clock in the morning, and then has what appears to me 3 o'clock, which ought to, in a non-Eastern Standard Time part of the year, the 3 o'clock shadow ought to somewhat reflect the 9 o'clock one in the morning, and yet it seems to be dramatically different. And I just wondered whether that's been spotted and whether anything turns on that fact in terms of the shadow impact on the existing house's, what will be its future private open space.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Looking at this particular dwelling unit and the way the shadow falls and the likely impacts, it's really assessed in the context of the adjoining property. The house that is closest to the boundary of the proposed dwelling has absolutely no windows or openings on that side, and the spaces through there on the adjoining property also doesn't really project or impact on that space on the adjoining property. But in terms of your question, you're referring to...
I was referring to page 303 of the document, 8.44. So you've got figure on page 303. You've got a figure 6 that shows the area of private open space for both dwellings.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Then it's talking about sunlight in 8.44A1. You're talking about the proposed additional dwelling is located to the northwest of the private open space of the existing dwelling. The proposal satisfies B in the additional dwelling will not cause 50% of the private open space of the existing dwelling to receive less than 3 hours of sunlight. But it was, as I say, that was referring back to the shadow diagram, which just to me doesn't quite gel with what I would have thought the shadow would have been at that time of the year. Given if you're looking at that page there with your left hand, the diagram for 9 o'clock in the morning has a very extensive shadow. The correspondent, well, on that, wherever it is, for 3 o'clock is something, it doesn't seem to mirror image the 9 o'clock one.
Three o'clock may not be exactly right.
I've assessed it on the shadow diagrams as it is, and to comply. And I'll, yeah, because we can have that discussion.
Thanks.
Yeah, so essentially that the shadow diagrams that we've got in front of us have been taken to be correct, and it's been assessed on the basis of the application.
Yep. Show. Thank you, Heidi. Councillors, any other questions? Councillor Timwood? No. Any other questions, councillors? Okay, I'll move towards... Well, actually, I've got a vote. I've got a question. No, think about it. So if we approve here and it goes through into the building code, how will they go as far as setbacks and bushfire requirements? I know that's out of our area as such, but will they have perceived problems?
The building code is separate to your assessment.
Yes.
Here as a planning authority, correct? The building code, though, does require, if you're putting in a new boundary under, I think it's section 73 of the building code, if you're putting in a new boundary on a property that will have an effect on the distance for a fire safety feature, that you will need to get a building permit and perform any work that is required to satisfy the building code for fire separation.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to put the motion, or sorry, I'm going to go back to the second of the motion, Councillor Sinfield, for summing up.
Yes, I won't be supporting this. I just think it's for various reasons, parking, etc., is not a good outcome. Whether they can come back with a smaller design that we might view differently, I won't be supporting this.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Cameron.
Thank you. My view really is that if it was a smaller dwelling, I think I'd be a lot more comfortable with it. The fact that it is a fairly large three-bedroom home up against a fairly large home already gives me some anxiety. But I think I'd like to see it come back as a smaller one. But look, at the moment, we have to assess what we've got in front of us, and while I'm not comfortable with it, I will be supporting it.
Okay, thank you. And on the basis, I will put the motion. So all those in favour, please raise your hands and say aye. Johnston, Kelly, Cameron, Sheriff. Thank you. Against? White, Sinfield, Temple, King, Frederick. Motion is lost. Do we have an alternative motion for that? Yep, all right. Adjourn the meeting.
The building code is separate to your assessment.
Yes.
Here as a planning authority, correct? The building code, though, does require, if you're putting in a new boundary, under, I think it's section 73 of the building code, if you're putting in a new boundary on a property that will have an effect on the distance for a fire safety feature, that you will need to get a building permit and perform any work that is required to satisfy the building code for fire separation.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to put the motion, or sorry, I'm going to go back to the second of the motion, Councillor Sinfield, for summing up.
Yes, I won't be supporting this. I just think it's for various reasons, parking, etc., is not a good outcome. Whether they can come back with a smaller design that we might view differently, I won't be supporting this.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Cameron.
Thank you. My view really is that if it was a smaller dwelling, I think I'd be a lot more comfortable with it. The fact that it is a fairly large three-bedroom home up against a fairly large home already gives me some anxiety. But I think... I'd like to see it come back as a smaller one, but look, at the moment, we have to assess what we've got in front of us, and while I'm not comfortable with it, I will be supporting it.
Okay, thank you. And on the basis, I will put the motion. So all those in favour, please raise your hands and say aye. Johnston, Kelly, Cameron, Sheriff. Thank you. Against? White, Sinfield,
Temple, King, Frederick. Motion is lost. Do we have an alternative motion for that? Yep, all right. Adjourn the meeting. Okay, so reopening the meeting at 5:30. We have an alternative motion in front of us that is going to be moved by Councillor Sinfield, seconded by. Thank you. Councillor White, mental blank. Okay, any discussion as the mover of the motion, Councillor Sinfield?
Yes, basically this is trying to address all the issues. There's one, again, technical matters, because when it was advertised, the ad didn't include a reference to not meeting the private open space, but we think that's a matter that if it were appealed, the tribunal would assess anyway as to the way forward on that issue. If you don't flag it, then they're not going to discuss it. If they discuss it and say, well, it shouldn't be there, well, we get removed. So it's covering the bases, basically.
Yep. Thanks, Councillor. Councillor White, as a second up.
No further comment. No comment there.
Thank you. Open up for discussion, councillors, if needed. Any discussion? Okay. Anything to wrap up, Councillor White, as a seconder? Thank you. Councillor Sinfield, I'll put the motion then. All those in favour, please say aye. All those against? So Cameron, White, Sinfield was for. Who else was for it? Sorry. I need to record it. Temple, King, Frederick, and against Sheriff Johnson. Kelly. Oh, no, we are. We're just confusing people. Righto, moving on. Thanks, councillors. Planning Authority 4. We have no speakers of this one. Somebody like to move, somebody like to second this one. Councillor Sinfield. You're on fire today, Councillor Sinfield. Up the front. Seconder. Councillor Cameron, thank you. Councillor Sinfield has moved the motion.
Yes, well, it just fixes an error, and there is no sensible way to fix the error without going through this long-winded process, sadly. They have the right mechanism for SPPs, but not for this part of the process.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Cameron, anything to add?
Nothing to add.
Thank you. Open up discussion, councillors. Any comments, questions? Councillor King.
I will be an abstention. As much as I discourage abstentions on this one, I will be, on the basis that I've never been in support of a specific area plan for Westbury.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other discussion, councillors? If not, back to Councillor Cameron as the seconder of the motion. Councillor Sinfield.
Just a very quick comment. This actually reduces part of the footprint of the specific area plan, so it's a good thing in that sense.
Thanks, Councillor. Okay, I put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye and raise your hands. Councillor Johnston, Kelly, Cameron, White. Oh, everyone apart from those against. Councillor King. Well, which is a vote in the no, but anyway, it's an abstain. Yep, thank you. Got that, Chloe? Good, thanks. Just getting hot in here, is it? Community Wellbeing 1. Oh, we're out of Planning Authority, so we move out of Planning Authority now. Okay, Community Wellbeing. Adoption of proposed new policy, Indigenous recognition. Somebody like to move, somebody like to second. Councillor White, seconded. Councillor Cameron has a mover. Councillor White.
Yes, I must say that I do believe it is a little bit light on in terms of a meaningful policy, but I was encouraged by the discussion. Or the mention further through the document that we will be considering further actions, say, in regard to, what do they call it?
reconciliation action plans somewhere down the track. So I'm moving to accept this as a step in the right direction.
Thanks, Councillor Cameron.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Thank you to Melissa and those members of the community that participated in this. And, yeah, look, I'm really happy to accept it as a step in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you. Open up for discussion, debate, councillors. Councillor Sinfield.
Have I raised the other day a couple of minor word changes? Have they been incorporated or are they proposed to be incorporated? Any very, very minor matters.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, the period for that ended, so we didn't have enough time to get that through in time for today's council meeting.
So does an alternate motion have to be passed, or I would have thought they were just minimal word changes and if you scroll back up. In the objectives, the first dot point says within the Meander Valley local government area. Municipal area is defined in the Local Government Act. Local government area isn't. So I was just suggesting that we change the wording to municipal area. And also in the third dot point, you've included and waterways. So I was just asking in the first dot point where it says relating to the lands, that it also include reference to and waterways as a very minor addition for consistency of language. And then scrolling down, what was my other? The acknowledgement of country bit further down, I've suggested that we, instead of saying now known as Meander Valley, we've already named the municipality in the previous sentence, that we change the words to of our municipality, because, you know, I'm raising this a few times, half our municipality is not in Meander Valley. It's the Mersey and goes over as far as the Forth River, etc. So I was just, as I say, the first sentence says the Meander Valley Municipality was home to. That's perfectly fine. I'm saying in this one, we who live on the lands now, who live on the lands of our municipality. That's under in the welcome to. So on page 3, you have an acknowledgement of country, and I was just suggesting that that it says the second sentence would say acknowledgement of country gives recognition to both past peoples and also the present local Aboriginal people who live on the lands of our municipality.
As a seconder, I'm happy to accept this change.
Any other discussion, councillors? I have to say that I haven't been to many other places where the acknowledgement of the people, as in the tribe, occurs. It is usually Aboriginal people. It's not usually the two that are named there, and I guess I'm the one that will be saying it on a regular basis. I just wonder, are we dead set sure that there are only the two that we've named? We're not going to offend a third or fourth tribe, potentially, whereas a catch-all of Aboriginal people would be. And I guess that's just my personal view from somebody who has to say it. That's all right. Well, it is number 2, yes it is, that's dead right.
I guess the distinction we're acknowledging the past peoples and the fact that they are no longer on the land. And I've seen it acknowledged and we've seen it demonstrated the conflict coming over where a different Aboriginal people could acknowledge the past peoples. And the two that are known as past peoples are, in fact, the traditional custodians of the land. Other Aboriginal peoples that currently inhabit, acknowledging those peoples, but creating that link to the actual history and custodianship with Melbourne and Auckland. Something that is a little bit different to mainland Aboriginal history.
I sort of agree with your comments. It does name what we think were the two major tribes of the local area. Yes, because of our uniqueness here in Tassie, we have Aboriginals here, but they're not where they were, so to speak. It's all mixed up, so it sort of caters to that. But I remember asking Rob Buck, when the boss of National Parks for our area, when he was here, and I think his response was they don't typically refer to the tribes in their messaging when they're making the acknowledgement. But is there enough in whichever way you go? Have you got a way of doing it that you're comfortable with at the time?
Again, sorry to butt in, Mick. I'm certainly comfortable with number two. I do worry that with number one we're naming two tribes, and at some stage somebody may come forward and say, oh no, there was somebody else, and we don't want to get in that space at all. Be very generic. Melissa, sorry.
I suppose through you, Mr. Mayor, just in response to that, that's why we have spent considerable time consulting with key people in the Aboriginal community over these two clans, particularly Auntie Patsy Cameron, who's done a lot of research into clans and in a historical sense, and also Uncle Hank, who is a local Aboriginal elder, also agrees with Auntie Patsy's recommendation. But you are right, in speaking to other people in the Aboriginal community, Graham Gardner, for example, he was more comfortable with the second acknowledgement, which doesn't name any clans. But I am quite comfortable that we have done quite a bit of consultation with appropriate people.
Yep. Appreciate that. Councillor Kelly, you did a...
Yeah. I was actually going to do some Googling. I sort of find some of this stuff's forced down our throats a little bit too much, in my opinion. They struggle with the traditional owners. I wonder what proof there are that there was actually ownership took place. I was going to actually Google it up and see what the word owner means. But I think they used to free range more than own pieces.
Well, you're probably correct in that sense, but now you're getting a little bit controversial there, I guess. We have to acknowledge that they were the first people here that we're... That's fine. That's good. Councillor Frederick?
I think... I'll go number two. I think we shouldn't use the two tribes. I'd rather not insult anybody by not including them than the other way around.
Thanks. Councillor Tebble? Microphone, please, Councillor.
If we're using the names of the clans, they do they start with a capital letter or a lowercase?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'd have to double check that with Aboriginal elders. They have looked at this policy and didn't bring that up, so I assume what we have before us is correct.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, what we're trying to do is to acknowledge the standard of the National Indigenous Australians Agency, the federal government standard. What you've got there in terms of the acknowledgement of country is two choices based on the group of your ceremony and So it doesn't, you know, to your point, you can use
either
to demonstrate. And so I'd suggest where you are undertaking an event that does lean very strongly towards the traditional, now past peoples, that you would use one, and perhaps for something more generic, you could use two. So the policy accommodates a choice. I suggest that that choice is better than an exclusion. Because the exclusion will instantly disenfranchise a view.
Thanks, Jim. Okay, moving along. Are we comfortable with the intent and the recommendation that sits, or any other discussion on it? I'll go back to Councillor Cameron as the seconder of the motion.
No, I just, we're probably not going to get it right, and I guess we'll, encourage continual feedback from the community, I guess, and we can review it again, but I really do think it's probably long overdue and a step in the right direction.
Thanks. Councillor White, as the mover of the motion.
Yeah, nothing further to add.
Thank you. On the basis, I should thank Melissa for putting her time and effort into this and bringing it forward to us. Thank you. But I'll put the motion to all those in favour, please say aye. Raise your hands. Against? Thank you. Council Sheriff and Kelly against. Moving on. Infrastructure 1, proposed road names. Do I have a mover for those, please? Councillor Sheriff, thank you. Seconder. Councillor King. Councillor Sheriff as the mover. Thank you. Councillor King.
In line with Councillor Sheriff's comment, I like the inference to gin. That's really good. And it'll be important for people who live there to have a nice address.
Thank you. Okay. Open up for discussion. Councillor White.
If we're going to do this, I think we should offer elocution lessons to people who are going to be living in pepperberry clothes, because they're going to have to say it a lot of times, and it's quite hard to say pepperberry clothes.
Where's that again, Councillor? Two. Okay, so any other discussion, councillors? Councillor Temple?
As someone that has to write Meander Valley Road regularly, I prefer a smaller, short name.
Any other discussion, councillors? Councillor Sinfield?
Just my stock standard comment about the nomenclature board and the stupidity of not being allowed to name something after something else. Not that that applies here, but... It needs reiterating that it's a donkey of an idea, because we're going to end up with bizarre spellings and names and all sorts of things if your address is identified by the entire address, including your town name. Then that restriction caveat shouldn't be there.
Thanks, Councillor. Anything else? No. As the seconder of the motion, Councillor King. Anything? No. Councillor Sheriff as the mover. No. Okay, put the motion. All those in favour? All right. Against? Okay, I'm putting in. All those in favour? Righto, that's unanimous. Thank you. Yes. We do. Right, moving on. Governance 1. Council meeting dates and times.
I'll move it.
Oh, hang on. There he is away. Councillor Cameron is the mover.
No, it's too late.
Councillor Frederick.
only to remind anybody interested in council elections at the end of next year that that time is not set in concrete. So if that doesn't suit people, don't let it put you off from running for council.
Oh, yeah, okay. We'll review that when we...
Through you, Mr. Mayor, just further to Councillor Cameron's comment, is actually a requirement that after election that the newly elected composed council review those times and dates and set their forward year.
I just want to query before we go too far. Oh, we've moved to Councillor Frederick. Do you want anything to say as a seconder?
No.
Okay. Query, are we happy with Tuesday, the 18th of January? That's not too close to when yous are all coming back from the beach and that sort of stuff.
With the planning, the special meeting?
Yes.
The reason why we had a special meeting was because Councillor Knott had a view that we should do that. If in the event that you do change it, we can still deal with planning matters under my delegation.
Councillor Shepherd.
Can I put an apology in for Tuesday the 13th of December?
No. Or the 8th of November. Or the 11th of October. I don't reckon. Well, you will be if you're re-elected again. No. Well, that's right. Anything else? Happy with that, councillors? I mean, we're looking a long way ahead. So, but anyway, times have to be set, put in the calendars. We can adjust. Everyone happy? Can I move on? All those in favour, please say aye. Right. That's unanimous. Thank you. Okay, governance three.
Two.
Have I missed one? Oh, I have two. Sorry. Councillor Kelly moved. Second up. Cameron. As the mover, Councillor Kelly. Anything? Take those notes. You're deaf today. Councillor Cameron?
No, it's a really good and important function of council, these committees, and I really much enjoy being on the Grants Committee, so looking forward to another year.
Good. Oh. I did notice at Tas Water that some councils have their general manager as a proxy. Not saying we should do, I'm just saying that they do... Choose the mayor and the. No, not as a proxy, I say. Not. No, I know, I'm just saying. By the time I get out of it, I'm just letting you know. But that's the only thing that I've picked up out on all of this. I haven't seen other councils with two, I've got to say. It's. Third one. Can do. That's anyway, we need to somebody. Oh, you've moved it. We've seconded it. Okay. Any other discussion? No. Happy. Righto. Put the motion. All those in favour. That's unanimous. Thank you. Righto. Governance three. Appointment of members to special committee. Moved. Councillor Kelly. Seconder. Councillor King. Councillor Kelly in the discussion. Well, it's out of our hands, really, isn't it? Councillor King, any discussion? No, I don't know that they are, but anyway. Right, any other discussion? No. Put the motion, all those in favour. Against? Oh. No. On this?
Yeah.
Sorry?
There's someone on the Deloraine community car list that's actually deceased. So.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. C. Fowler.
Oh, yeah, Charlie. Uh-oh. Oh, about 3 months ago? John?
Yeah, just one comment.
comments on that. The list of names came from the recent AGMs of those special committees, so it may have been since that AGM.
Right. Okay. Thank you. We just moved it. We accepted it. Everyone happy? Well, it will be amended. I'm sure there's some others on other committees. I mean, Cape Side's got a huge amount of people. So, anyway. All four. Yep. So, somebody like to... Where are we? Closed. Moving to closed. Steady up. Which one? That one. Thank you. Do you? Do you? Only for that item though, Steph. Oh, is it? Oh, okay, I haven't got there yet. So, moving in, so all attending closed sessions are a reminder of the confidential nature of discussions in closed session and the restrictions on disclosure under Section 338A of the Local Governments Act 1993 and also provisions relating to the misuse of information under Section 339 of the Local Governments Act. So, we're moving to closed session. So, who's moving? Councillor White, Councillor Sheriff. Yes, Councillor White, Councillor Sheriff moved and seconded. We haven't voted on it yet. I've stepped a little ahead. All those in favour of moving in closed session, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Take that as carried. Yeah.